underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Kristen Hannah's best-selling novel, The Nightingale, illuminated the courage of the women of the French Resistance in World War II France. Her new novel, The Great Alone, focuses on fiercely independent women in extraordinarily difficult circumstances who must fight each day to survive with a novel set in Alaska. It is entitled The Great Alone, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Kristen Hannah to The Book Show this week. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joe. It's great to be here.
Very nice to have you on the program. What brought you ultimately to Alaska?
Well, you know, in the, I guess the late 70s, early 80s, my parents sort of trekked north to Alaska in search of adventure. And they ended up meeting a homesteading family up on the Kenai River. And these two families sort of came together and built what would become our family business, the Great Alaska Adventure Lodge. And, you know, now fast forward, three generations of my family have worked on the lodge. And, you know, I've gone up most summers for most of my adult life, and I just absolutely love it.
So that is an important point that you have personal connections to this story on many levels, not the least of which is that family connection to Alaska.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's just a real part of sort of my family story.
How much did you want to infuse the novel with what you knew, your story, and that time of coming of age of when you did and put that into the mix?
Well, I chose to set the novel in the 70s for a couple of reasons. One, because that is when I came of age. And, you know, so I have a lot of memories of that time sort of culturally and otherwise that I wanted to bring to the story. And I was very much, because I came of age, you know, in that time period, that's, you know, the Vietnam War era. And that played a really big part in my life. You know, I wore a POW bracelet for a friend's father who never came home. And I saw a lot of my friends' dads either not come home or come home changed. And that has just really stayed with me. And a couple of years ago when I was writing this book, beginning it, I sort of realized that the sort of unrest in America right now kind of felt similar, you know, to the 70s. And so it just seemed like a really good era to set the story. It kind of made it feel a little more relevant.
Tell us about the 13-year-old girl who is at the center of this story.
Well, she's a girl who, you know, is trying to come of age in this turbulent time. Her father has come home from the Vietnam War, sort of changed and volatile. He was a prisoner of war, and he is suffering from undiagnosed, untreated PTSD. And so he's having trouble keeping a job, and he's having trouble, you know, the family is struggling to sort of make it. And he decides that going north to Alaska and, you know, homesteading a cabin, which you could still do in Alaska in the 70s, and living off the grid would really be the answer to, you know, his nightmares and his trauma. And so the family, you know, ventures north, and they are pretty much completely unprepared for this. And so they find themselves in a very, you know, beautiful but harsh and unforgiving environment. And as winter descends and Alaska sort of turns dark, his volatility increases. And, you know, the mother and daughter sort of realize that the dangers inside their home may be as great as the dangers outside.
It is amazing in reading the story of just what an impulsive decision that is to get up, move your family to Alaska, live off the grid, and try in some way in all of that to find peace.
You know, it was interesting as I was writing about this. One of the things that I sort of didn't expect as I was writing about these Alaskan homesteaders in the 70s was this realization that it was very much like, you know, the early American pioneers, these people who just made a decision. They were either running to something or running away from something, but they, you know, packed up everything they owned, got in a covered wagon and headed west without knowing what they were going to find or how they were going to survive or what skills they were going to need to survive. And that's very much sort of the case with people who moved up to live off the grid in Alaska as late as the 70s.
And then the whole family very much learns about isolation, learns about, as the title indicates, the great alone.
Well, yeah, I mean, they live in this, you know, this absolutely stunningly beautiful place, which it's a fictional community, but it's on a remote corner of the Kenai Peninsula across the water from Homer, which many people know is called Land's End in Alaska. And so it looks like it's, you know, relatively close to civilization. But when you get there, you realize that especially in the summer, there are very few roads. There's very few ways to get around. You either have to, you know, fly in or boat in. And the tides have a real changeableness to them that makes even that difficult. And so you end up being, you know, incredibly remote. And then you add into that the Alaska environment, you know, the weather, the darkness, the predators, all of that. And it just becomes a real test of survival.
And obviously there is a young girl here who is trying to survive very much as well. And what she is going through, and this is through her eyes, right?
Right. It's, you know, it's kind of her learning at first, you know, who her family is, because her father has been gone. And then upon his return, it's easy for parents to sort of hide the truth from their children. But in Alaska, where sort of pretense is stripped away by isolation and remoteness and the need to depend upon each other for survival, she begins to see the truth of her dysfunctional family, you know, the truth of her father's mental illness. And, you know, we know now so much more than they knew then about, you know, what he was dealing with. And then the realization that her mother is, you know, somehow complicit in this toxic relationship. And, you know, it is sort of this daughter, Lenny, it's her growing up and realizing that she loves, you know, her mother in spite of her weaknesses, and sort of realizing that she's going to have to learn to survive on her own.
Kristen Hanna is our guest. The name of the new book is The Great Alone. It is published by St. Martin's Press. In talking about the toxicity of that relationship, one of the things that comes through is this issue of domestic violence and the tensions between the Albrights. Why was that important for you to write about, and what did you want to explore in writing about this couple?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, of course, I started this book several years ago. But it seems, you know, especially right now with the Me Too and the Time's Up and sort of this focus on violence against women and, you know, the struggles that women have in the workplace and these sorts of things, it seems really important to sort of bring domestic violence into that discussion and to sort of, you know, bring it out into the open. Because one of the great, you know, problems with domestic violence is that shame keeps so much of it silent. And, you know, it feels good to be a part of that conversation, which I very much wanted to be. But I also wanted to very clearly focus on sort of the woman, you know, Lenny rising above that and triumphing in spite of it and finding her own strength.
In finding that strength, what do you think and who do you think Lenny looks to as role models of not having that at home and really having to find that strength on her own?
You know, there's a character in the book named Large Marge who becomes kind of a surrogate family member, surrogate mother to both Cora and Lenny. And I really love this character. She really was sort of shaped from Alaska itself. You know, this idea that in Alaska, it doesn't matter so much who you were, it matters who you choose to become. And this woman was a former big city prosecutor in D.C., you know, who wore suits every day and was very much focused on her career and her ambition. And a tragedy in her own family set her off to find a new life for herself in Alaska. And, you know, now she lives in a yurt and she takes showers at the laundromat. But she survives sort of on her own terms in her own way. And she really becomes, I think, the ballast for Lenny and for Cora to both look and say, this is how strong a woman can be. This is how you can run your life. And I think she gives them both a way out and a way to survive.
I love that character, and it's a character that does not suffer fools gladly and certainly does not have any, is not going to put up with any type of abuse.
No, but it's interesting because she does highlight, and it does speak to this idea that one of the problems with domestic violence is, you know, the victims have to come forward. They have to seek help. And so Large Marge really sort of works on that angle to the best right. of her ability.
Obviously, you also are writing about PTSD. You are writing about the fragile mental state of Ernst and what happens to him. And as that mental state deteriorates, what was it about that subject that drew you and wanted to explore someone who was going through this?
Well, you know, I have, like I said, coming of age during the Vietnam War and seeing how our vets were treated upon their return and then having lived through, of course, you know, more wars, more vets coming home, I have found myself drawn to this issue over and over again. I wrote a book a few years ago called Homefront about a female Black Hawk pilot who deploys and ends up having to deal with PTSD. And, you know, I guess bottom line, I just feel incredibly strongly that this is a topic that needs to be in the national conversation a lot, all the time maybe, because we really have to work on treating our returning veterans and their families well upon their return and taking care of them.
As you mentioned a few moments ago, this is this time of setting the book in the 70s, this is when you grew up as well. That no doubt informed your writing of this time and what people were, how people were coming home from the war and what you were witnessing as a kid.
Absolutely. You know, you know, when it's all of your friends' dads, and it's on, you know, the TV every night and you're sort of seeing what's happening. You know, there was so much unrest and so much division in the country. And, you know, the war seemed to be so much a part of it from my perspective as a kid. You know, now I sort of see the bigger picture. But I just think it sort of, like I said, feels somewhat relevant to today in terms of how divided our country seems to be.
And also, you wonder both on when it comes to PTSD, when it comes to domestic violence, and many of the issues that you're writing about in the book of how far have we come since the 1970s?
You know, actually, I thanks for saying that, because that was something that I found particularly interesting with regard to women's rights, too, you know, because I really wanted to sort of show where we were. I mean, it's fascinating to me that, you know, in the early 70s, a working woman couldn't get a credit card without her husband or her father's, you know, permission. And so I did like to remind people that, you know, as far as we still have to go, we have come a long way.
When you look at characters like this and creating them, and I'm also going to go back to characters in The Nightingale, of what is exciting for you in telling the story of these women?
You know, as I've gotten older, especially, I have found my attention drawn sort of repeatedly to lost women's history and stories of women's bravery, courage, dedication, you know, how we survive, what we do to survive. You know, there are so many remarkable stories of ordinary women sort of, you know, becoming heroic in these extraordinarily dark and dangerous times, especially World War II, but also, you know, Alaska. I mean, you're talking about women trying to survive essentially with their wits against a landscape that seems designed sometimes to drive them out. And then also, you know, dealing with the wildness in man and the dark nature of man as, you know, as they try to combat that as well. And so I guess I just love telling these stories about the, you know, that sort of celebrate the resilience and durability of women.
My understanding is that you have been writing this story for a long time, and actually some of this was written as you were working on The Nightingale as well.
It all came after The Nightingale, but I think what you're referring to is that I worked for about 18 months on a book set in Alaska with all the same characters following The Nightingale, but it was much more of a thriller. And it ended up, I just wasn't happy with the novel. And so a couple of years ago, I threw it away and, you know, started over. And that's when I came up with the 1970s setting and the homesteaders. And that's really when the book came together.
What pressure did the success of The Nightingale put on you, or did the success of any novel put on a writer?
Well, I mean, it's always, you know, you always feel the pressure to write a better book than you did last time. You always feel the pressure to sell better than you sold the last time. But, you know, in general, I've been doing this for 25 years. I've written, I think, over 20 books. So generally, that pressure is not something that has ever bothered me much or, you know, caused me much sleepless nights. However, The Nightingale was, of course, a different thing. The Nightingale became the kind of success that authors, you know, dream of. The kind of success I never even really imagined for myself. And I do think that it did mess with my mind. It was a daunting task suddenly to try to write the book that followed that because it was just so beloved by so many people. And I think all of that contributed to this book that I threw away. It was kind of, I think, me finding my way, trying to write something different, and finally realizing once kind of the dust settled and I had accepted The Nightingale's success, realizing, you know, look, Kristen, do what you do. Sit down, write a book about, you know, incredible women in extraordinary circumstances. Write a book that you want to read and just get back to work.
When you have a novel like that is so beloved, do you think or do you want to think about what it is that attracted people. Not so much as an impetus to what to write next, but just out of curiosity of what it was that you wrote that struck such a chord.
Absolutely. You're right. I mean, I didn't want to know why people loved it so that I could repeat it or anything, but I wanted to sort of understand. And, you know, in traveling around the country, and now that it's been several years, I almost have this gift of being able to look at, you know, the nightingale in my rearview mirror. And I think what it is it comes back to, you know, what we were talking about earlier. It's about this moment in time where women's narratives are becoming increasingly important. And we women particularly are rallying around these stories that haven't been told before. And so I think it's this combination with the Nightingale of this piece of history that people didn't know. And this history happens to be sort of women's heroic history. And then I also put it in the context of truly ordinary women, just, you know, a couple of sisters trying to survive. And that makes it a very sort of almost personal human female story. And I think that's what people have been responding to.
So the obvious question, especially from a male host, is what took so long?
You know, it's a fascinating question. I mean, you know, watching sort of what's happened in the last, you know, year in terms of sort of this kind of awakening of women is a fascinating thing. And I think it's wonderful, you know, for the millennials that are out there. I think it's a great sort of teaching and coming together moment. And so, you know, and I find that it's remarkable how many men love books like The Nightingale when they finally get them in their hands.
That's interesting, too. How have you found it to do that successfully, to get it in their hands?
Well, I mean, one of the things about The Nightingale, of course, that helps in terms of finding a male readership is that it's World War II. So it sort of begins in an arena that has been traditionally been sort of male driven anyway. So they're interested in that. But I think what happened is, you know, women read it and fell in love with it. And then they told their husband, boyfriend, father, boss to read it. And the men were then, you know, surprised by how much they liked it and sort of, you know, passed it on from there.
And I assume with this novel, given Vietnam, given the fact of coming back, PTSD, also issues that would attract a male readership.
I think so. And certainly Alaska falls
yes.
into, you know, I mean, you know, you're talking about the last frontier, you know, the rugged corners of America speaks to a lot of men also.
Talk about the title a little bit. I mean, we mentioned it a moment ago as to these characters. Was there any deeper meaning there for you?
Yeah, actually, it's really interesting. I think I mentioned my dad was kind of an adventurer, and part of that was, you know, a lot of family camping trips back in the day. And, you know, so we would all pack up our Volkswagen bus and, you know, go out camping into the unknown. And we would sit around the campfire at the end of the day, and my dad would recite Robert Service poems by heart. So these were poems that were written about Alaska back in the gold rush days. And one of them, one of the poems is entitled The Great Alone. And it sort of has become a nickname for Alaska. And it just seemed, you know, given the themes of survival in this book, that, you know, and this idea that, yes, you survive as a community and people help each other. But really, when the chips are down, you know, survival is something that one does alone. And so I knew from day one that it was the title of this book.
Kristen Hannah's new novel is The Great Alone. It is published by St. Martin's Press. Kristen, thank you so much for sharing with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
Thank you so much. It was really nice talking to you.
Thank you very much. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.